Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Power Up and Game. This is episode 26, and boy, do we have a packed episode today. But first, I want to welcome back a guest of ours. Well, actually, she's one of the main hosts, but she's been gone for a while. But she's back now. It's Riley. Riley, how are you feeling?
Hey, I'm feeling really good, actually. I'm really excited to get back to the show. This will be the first episode where I'm back that goes out. Like, we did record something that I was on, like, last week, but that's not going to be out for a while. So, this is the first episode that's going to make it out where I'm back, and I'm really excited. It's good to be back.
And, of course, I cannot forget our official, unofficial third member, Taylor. Taylor, how you doing?
Man, I am doing fantastic. Welcome back, Riley. It's great to have you back on Power Up and Game. And, ooh, we got a main topic. This is the most excited I've been for a main topic. I might say ever.
It's a good one to come back on, I gotta say.
Yeah, you've had a really good week.
Yeah. Without further ado, let's see what's on the docket for today. We have another Silent Hill rumor to talk about, because of course we do. It seems like it happens every few months at this point. We'll also talk about some of the stuff surrounding Overwatch 2 right now, including the requirements needed to even play the daggone game despite it being free to play. Infinity Ward has revealed what they plan to change from the Modern Warfare 2 beta to the full game. Ubisoft has once again delayed Skull and Bones. And in our main topic that has Taylor all giddy, we're injecting a little Nerds Talk Movies into this episode by talking about the teaser trailer for HBO's The Last of Us series. We'll also be going into details on what we hope to see from the series, what we think they should take from the games, and what we think they shouldn't touch. So, there will be massive spoilers for both games when we get to that topic. So, let's get into our stories of the week. Real quick, we want to say that you can find sources for all the topics we're going over today down in the description of this episode. We do that to give out proper credit, and if any listeners want to read further about the topics we cover, or simply want to check it out for themselves. So our first story of the week, Silent Hill game has been apparently raided in Korea. As reported by VGC from Gamatsu, South Korea's Game Ratings Committee has given a rating to a seemingly new Silent Hill game called Silent Hill, The Short Message. A new Silent Hill rumor or report pops up every few months at this point, with Konami rumored to be planning a bombastic return for the franchise. Since there isn't much to go on for this story in particular, here's my question or questions. Do either of you have any thoughts on the story, and when do you think we'll see anything official from Konami regarding Silent Hills? So, Riley, since you're making your official return, how about you kick this off first?
Sure, yeah. I don't know if I have many thoughts on this story in particular, other than, you know, kind of like you mentioned, this is just the latest in Silent Hill news. I kind of wish, like, I think it just shows, like, how much Konami doesn't really know what they're doing, or they don't really want to be in the video game business anymore. I mean, I think that's been apparent for a while. So, you know, we keep getting these rumors and leaks about Silent Hill games. And I gotta say, even the tagline for this new Silent Hill game doesn't really seem like it's gonna be a mainline Silent Hill game. I can't imagine, just the way it's named, it kind of gives off a mobile vibe, or maybe, something like not what Silent Hill fans probably want it to be. So, you know, other than that, I don't really have any particular thoughts on this one.
So, Taylor, what do you think?
I'm kind of in the same boat as Riley. We do have, so kind of the good news, and this isn't new news, though, is we know about all the reports and rumors that at some point in time, it seems like Silent Hill is going to come back in a big way. When that is, what that'll be, who fucking knows at this point, other than potentially just the Silent Hill 2 remake that has been rumored. So, for me, this is one of those stories that you see, and you're just kind of like, that's interesting, and you kind of just keep scrolling. unfortunately. Because this is kind of where the Silent Hill franchise is right now, until we get that big announcement from Konami. When do I think that would be? When I would want to do it is, I don't know, maybe around this time, because we're getting very close to Halloween, and I think that'd be a pretty cool announcement for anything Silent Hill related. But based on the way that Konami, Riley, I think you hit nail on the head, it seems like Konami's just, I don't know if it's just a lack of caring, them just taking it real slow with all their franchises and remakes. I mean, they haven't done anything with Metal Gear.
Nope.
Since Metal Gear Solid 5. And Konami just, it doesn't seem like they really care too much to announce something quickly. So I would have announced it around this time. When I think anything will be announced regarding Silent Hill, maybe E3 2023? Maybe?
I mean, honestly, if they really were working on something, Tokyo Game Show would have been the place to tease it. Like, everybody's been waiting. Like, Tokyo Game Show was right there. You could have just made, like, a quick announcement for it and be like, hey, 2023, 2024 is when you, like,
we'll it see would've, more of it. And don't get me wrong, when the Silent Hill game gets announced eventually, it's going to be the point of conversation or one of the main points of conversation. But if it was announced at the Tokyo Game Show, it would easily have been the only point of conversation coming out of the
event. Oh, yeah. If it was announced at Tokyo Game Show, it would have stole the show.
Which yeah, like, it would just overshadowed anything that happened there.
Yeah, you had to do was like show a title, Silent Hill, short message. And people would be like, oh, this is what we're going to talk about for like the next 6 weeks or 6 months, whatever. But yeah, I'm with you guys. It doesn't seem like Konami actually cares about any of their franchises, or like Riley said, in video games in general. If they can't make it a slot machine, they don't really care. But with everything being remastered and microtransaction out the wazoo, you think that, yeah, this would be the time where Konami's like, oh, wow, we can do a games as a service Silent Hills where, I don't know, new houses open up or you get new characters or some crap. I don't know. Seasonal Silent Hills or some crap. They come up with something. But yeah, short messages does kind of sound like maybe it's a mobile game, but I think it might just be like a code name for a multiplayer Silent Hill, like kind of like Dead by Daylight or something, you know? I would expect Konami to go trend chasing rather than just make a run-of-the-mill regular Silent Hill game. But if this is real, hey, cool, Konami. I mean, you got a lot of people waiting on you, but what was that franchise that where you take pictures of ghosts? Oh, I forgot the name of it.
Deadly Premonition?
No, not Premonition.
That is it. I'm 99% sure that's it.
Is it? No, isn't that the Suda 51 game?
I don't know.
The game where you take pictures of ghosts, I'm pretty sure is Deadly Premonition.
Hang on. We have Google.
We do have Google. Or we could be the only podcast out there that uses Bing. It's up to you guys.
You know, I take the risk and be like, yeah, we use Bing. Maybe Microsoft.
We lose followers. We lose listeners immediately. Just like, oh, what the hell am I listening to?
Yeah, we use Firefox and Bing. How about that? But yeah, there's not much we can say about this. If it's true, like, this happens all the time to where I'm kind of sick of hearing about Silent Hill. Like, if it's not the Guillermo del Toro game, I don't really care.
It's not Deadly Premonition. It's Fatal Frame.
Fatal Frame. There we go. I knew it. Sorry. Well, I didn't know the title, but I knew it wasn't Deadly Premonition.
Credit where credit's
due. There we go. Riley, our researcher. See, Taylor and I would have just let it go.
I can't let it go. Because of the episode. I can't be wrong.
Yeah, and everybody who listens to the episode like, oh, those two suck. They don't know shit.
But Michael, you, for one, props to you for getting that right there. You should feel very vindicated. Secondly, partially. I think you got a good point to where there's no real reason to be hyped about Silent Hill. Because, like I was saying at the start of this thing, like we're waiting just until Konami decides to announce anything. So until Konami makes that big announcement, I think at least for me, I'm going to be looking at all these Silent Hill reports and going, that's interesting, and continue to scroll. because there's nothing. I know that it's not going to get announced tomorrow. I say that I'm going to regret it because watch Konami do that. you know what I mean?
That seems to happen to us every now and again. Like, well, this won't happen. Then it'll happen like a day or two. Like right after we record an episode, it's happened to us a couple times. We're like, this is a rumor. We don't think it's true. And it'll happen like on Twitter. And we're like, oh, crap. We can't go back and record now. So, hey, everybody, if that look keeps happening, hey, there you go. We gave you your Silent Hill game. All right. So moving on to our next story, I'm actually going to pass it on to Taylor because this one is a little more personal to me. So I actually will save what I got to say for last. So Taylor, go ahead and take it away.
All right. So it will take new players around 100 matches to unlock all the original heroes in Overwatch 2. In a blog post, Blizzard announced that new players to Overwatch won't be thrown right into the thick of it when the game releases. Instead, new players will be restricted at the start of the game, with the goal to ease them into the game's full roster of heroes and features. Here's a full excerpt from the blog post. Quote, "The first-time user experience is an introduction to Overwatch 2, specifically designed for brand new players who make their account post-launch. We want first-time user experience to welcome players more gradually to Overwatch 2, as we've seen consistent feedback from new players feeling overwhelmed by numerous game modes and heroes. New players begin with access to a limited set of game modes, heroes, and some other restrictions to onboard them more gradually. The first phase of our new FTUE rapidly unlocks all of the game modes and the ability to chat in-game. And the second phase unlocks all of the original Overwatch heroes over the course of approximately 100 matches. This focused experience eases new players into the world of Overwatch by teaching them about different modes, rules, and other high-level aspects of the game in an approachable way. Most FTUE restrictions are lifted while in a group, so new players can team up with their friends at any time to play almost any game modes. Competitive is the exception to this rule, because new players must complete a specific challenge to access the game mode," end quote. By the way, to access competitive, you just have to win 50 quick play matches. Along with this, players will be required to attach a phone number to their BattleNet account in order to play Overwatch 2, and Blizzard will be recording in-game voice chat as well. According to the developer, this is all to help deter Smurf accounts and toxic players. I have a feeling the last part is what everyone is going to be honing in on, but first, do you have any thoughts on Overwatch 2's first-time user experience restrictions? It really feels like Michael's going to have a long rant about this, so Riley, I feel like we should get our thoughts out of the way. Riley, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, so the first time I looked at this article when you sent it over for us to look at, I was kind of thinking that this was sort of a weird thing to do and that maybe they should offer the option to kind of turn it off. Like, it could be there for new players who want to be onboarded gradually and not there for players who don't want that. Like, that seems like a pretty simple thing because, you know, on its face, it does seem kind of crazy that it's going to take, 100 matches to unlock all of the heroes, and you have to win 50 matches, and as you go on, you can unlock different things in the game. But I actually read the Blizzard blog post that we're going to link in this story as well. And yeah, like you said, it's more to do with discouraging, you know, toxic players and disturbing or disruptive players, I should say. So, I mean, I'm kind of split on this because on one hand, I can't tell if it may be welcoming to some people and it may turn off other people that want to pick up Overwatch 2. You know, like, they're going to be like, oh, I have to go through all this crap just to get all the heroes and to play, like, you know, this other game mode and to chat in the game. And, you know, like, it's something that I haven't really seen. Now, granted, I don't play a lot of online games these days, but it's something, like, it seems like they're actually trying to do something about disruptive players. It should be also noted, I think they said that they're also turning off the chat in lobby. So, you know, these are all things.
I didn't even know there was a chat in lobby.
Yeah, I think they said that in the blog post. Don't at me if I'm wrong. yeah, so I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it. I think it's interesting that they're doing something to deter disruptive players, but on the other hand, they may have gone a little bit too far. Either way, I probably won't play the game. So, you know, it's not going to affect me in such a big way, but yeah.
I think for me, I'm kind of on the same page as Riley, to whereas in the intention, cool. Yeah, because there's a lot of, especially in these multiplayer games, whether it be Overwatch, Call of Duty, which we'll talk about Call of Duty later. What's another one? Rainbow Six Siege. Now I'm blanking all these competitive multiplayer games. But all those games, there are Smurf accounts. There is a lot of toxicity around it. So if you can help deter some of that, good. My one criticism, I don't even say criticism, but just concern, is it feels like this game, when it first got announced, it was, oh, it's going to be basically everybody who played Overwatch 1 can go play Overwatch 2 for free. And it's going to be mostly what you're paying for is a PvE experience. And now, it turns out, for the PvP, it's completely free to play. Which, to me, when I first saw that, I was like, cool, that means more people are going to get to play this game. It's going to be very accessible. Ever since that point in time, it feels like this game has gotten less and less accessible. And more hoops for people to jump through. And it's just kind of weird. I don't know how that's going to work out for Blizzard and Overwatch 2. And especially since the talk around the game itself hasn't been very positive itself. A lot of people are kind of criticizing how many changes were actually made from Overwatch 1 to Overwatch 2. And the season pass, the battle pass, not the season pass, the battle pass for the game and what exactly that's going to be. And yeah, it's just, I wonder how accessible this game's going to be for new players and how much they're going to really jump into it. But I guess I'm going to throw it to Michael here for whatever this rant's going to be. No idea. Michael, take it away. Please don't make me edit out a lot of it.
Oh, you will. No, I'm joking. It's not going to be as bad. I've been playing Overwatch since day one. I remember when I got it, I wasn't interested in it, but my buddies, they were like, oh, no, it's going to be kind of cool. It's going to be fun. And so they talked me into getting it. So we all team up and play with these cool heroes. And I enjoyed it. And I played it nearly every day for like the first 3 or 4 years. And that's one of my play with Halo. We all know how I felt about Halo. But recently, it's getting tired because they're using the same old events, the same old Frankenstein event, the Junkrat event, the holiday Christmas event, blah, blah, blah. So, of course, everybody's waiting for something new. And then Overwatch 2 popped up. I'm like, okay, this better not be Overwatch 1.5. And yes, it's pretty much Overwatch 1.5. And originally, the developers were like, well, that's because we've got a new engine, or we've updated our engine, and there's things this engine can do that our old engine couldn't. So Overwatch 1 isn't as... So we couldn't switch things to Overwatch 1 from 2 or something. And then they were like, but you can still transfer all your stuff from Overwatch 1 to 2. And now you find out that, hey, everybody who bought Overwatch 1, you can't play Overwatch 2 unless you give us your phone number. So basically, everybody who bought Overwatch 1 is locked out, because on October 2nd will be the last day you can play Overwatch 1, because on the 3rd, it'll have a blackout while everything updates to Overwatch 2. And on October 4th is when Overwatch 2 launches. So for everybody who bought the game who doesn't want to do the two-step SMS protection like me, I don't want to do that. I just don't feel that I want to give a corporation my phone number like that. For some, I don't know why, it's just me. I don't trust them with my email data. Now I'm going to give my phone number. That's just, I don't like that. It's one of the reasons why I couldn't play Doom Eternal, because I needed a stupid Bethesda.net account, and I'm not going through all that just to play a single game. So for me personally, that means I cannot play Overwatch 2. And if I want to go back and play Overwatch 1, I can't because it's gone. The game I paid for disappeared. No more. Can't buy it on the digital store. Can't play it with friends. There's no real offline mode for it because there's no story mode. And if you're going to get Overwatch 2, you have to pay for Overwatch 2. And this is really stupid. I don't like the way that they're handling this. This whole overly protective of players thing is what's hurting this game. Like Riley, I don't know. There's just something about jumping through all these hoops that I don't really care for. And I don't like this FTUE, this first-time user experience. Overwatch thinks Blizzard thinks you're dumb. That's basically what this looks like to me. They think you're dumb. They think you need your handheld. They don't think that you can learn, you can play and learn while you go. It goes to show that their skill-based matchmaking, if they're using that in this game, is garbage, and they know it's garbage. You could have an optional tutorial and just have players go through that and like, hey, you get a tutorial skin or something. Like, you don't have to lock these players away. I mean, you don't have to lock these players away from characters that they might want. Maybe they'll think, I don't know, Reinhardt is cool, but you can't play Reinhardt because you haven't played the tutorial or something. Like, if you want to go full tank, it's taking one step forward with accessibility and taking 10 steps back with accessibility at the same time. I don't like this whole 100 matches thing because it makes it feel like one of those mobile games where you can slowly unlock the characters or you can just buy them outright, which I don't think they're doing that with these old characters, buying them outright. You actually have to play to earn them. So I'm not going to give them kudos for that, but at least they're not going that far with it. And I think it's like what, you have to play 10 matches to unlock a character. So like it takes up to 100 matches. So I guess there's 10 characters locked away. No, they said all of them. Who knows? I don't know. And plus, you have to unlock competitive mode. You got to get certain points in other mode. Why? Some people are sweats. They just want to go straight into competitive, and they should be able to do that. Those are more steps back for accessibility. You are locking options that players from Overwatch 1 already has and care about. They don't want to play quick match. They want to play competitive, but they can't because you're doing this free-to-play mobile crap to where you have to lock everything away and you force players to play a specific way, a specific mode in order to get to the parts that they want. And that is just outright ridiculously stupid. You lock away players from Overwatch 1. I can't play my game anymore that I bought at full price on day one because, oh, well, we're just going to merge all the servers into one thing. You already mentioned that Overwatch 1 stuff is coming to Overwatch 2. So why are you shutting down Overwatch 1 servers? Well, Overwatch 2 is going to be free to play. It doesn't matter. I should still be able to play Overwatch 1. That's like me going back and saying, hey, Respawn, since Titanfall 2 is out, can I still play Titanfall 1? Well, yeah, of course you can. Just because Titanfall 2 is out doesn't mean you can't play 1. That's just stupid. Like, it makes no sense to lock people away from a game they bought simply so you can push them towards this free-to-play, pay us to unlock crap, and pretty much rub all the Overwatch veterans the wrong way. Like, this whole, we want to make everything user-friendly is downright ridiculous. You don't need to record people's chat. Just have a competent in-game reporting system. That's all you need. You don't need to check up on me like mommy and daddy and I have a prepaid phone and you get to check all my messages and crap. I don't need you listening to all my stuff because I talk shit. My friends talk shit. We already know this. We don't want somebody at Blizzard blocking us off of our game because I don't like the way you say these no-no words. Like, that's outrageous. It's ridiculously stupid. Yes, it's your game, but it's a game that I bought. If me and my friends want to talk shit, we should be allowed to. If people don't like it, have a system in there where you can mute specific players. You used to be able to do that with some games. You don't like the way somebody was talking? Mute that player. You can still have the chat open and hear everybody else. But no.
If they're saying something derogatory, you're going to report them.
Yeah, exactly. You can report that. You can put in a message what they said. You can mute them. And you can move on with your life. But no, some of these developers, they're taking this whole thing way too far to where they feel like they are the ones who have to do it. Not you, them. Instead of making a competent system, they're just going to do it themselves and be like, well, it's what we say go. We don't want you saying this. We don't like this. If you say one thing that somebody might find offensive, you don't get to play this game anymore. It's like, well, that's really stupid. If I paid for it, I should still be able to play it. But no, they want to control the way players play, the way players act, and the things that players can do within the game. And that's ridiculous. And that's was one of the many, many reasons I am not looking forward to Overwatch 2. And I'm upset that I can't play Overwatch 1 anymore. I put the game down for a while because I want to see the changes that they made. But now that I know that I can't even play the game that I paid for, it just really pisses me off.
Well, that was that was a rant. I built it up and I was like, man, I hope Michael actually has a rant here. And he did. I did try to chime in there to, you know, just kind of get the feel for how the rant was going, and I gotta admit it was getting pretty hot in there.
I mean, I was gonna play the game. I mean, I was gonna give Overwatch 2 a shot and play it, and then like maybe a week after the game came out, we do a podcast episode and get what this Mike think about Overwatch 2. But I guess we're not gonna get that anymore.
I will say, just to kind of, I don't know, counterbalance some of the things. At least, like, you as an existing player don't have to go through the first-time user experience. Also, you would have to give them your phone number, though. Yeah. So, but, I mean, I think the technology is interesting, and I think they're trying to do interesting things. Here's something that I thought about as you were having your rant, Michael.
Yeah, the problem is they're playing Big Brother, and they don't need to.
It's also my understanding that there's going to be a system where they record your chat and save it for a little bit. It's my understanding that they won't actually check it until somebody reports you, but there will be certain, I think there are certain like flagged words that they're gonna, I guess it's my understanding that they're gonna feed the text through the AI, and there's gonna be specific flagged words where, like, if you said that thing, then it's probably, like, an autoban kind of thing. But, I mean, that's just the feeling I got from what I read in the blog post.
I would also assume that those are, you know, not, hey, you fucking suck at this game, and more so towards, like, hey, this person's saying derogatory shit.
Yeah, fuck, like,
that person.
I think they would only do that for, like, really, really bad stuff. And then if somebody reports you and you said something, then they'll have the ability to go back and check the text of your speech. But this technology isn't perfect. The thing is, they even mentioned that they're not going to keep the text chat forever. So if you want to report somebody, you have to do it basically right then so that they can go check the text log and, you know, maybe actually do something about it. The other thing is, what if it's like, what if the text-to-speech recognition like actually messes up and says something that like you didn't say, or what if somebody in the background says something that you didn't say, and then you get like an auto ban? You know, like, stupid thing to think about, but we have like parrots in our house. Like, what if like like, some of them come from like really abusive households where like there's really like not so good people housing these birds, and then they come into our house and they might say something like really bad. Like, what if that happens? You know, so there's a lot of weird, like, there
side
are
side note that would really catch me off guard one day if just walking into my house and a parrot just says something really terrible. It's like, where the fuck did that come from?
All of our birds are pretty good. We only have one that says his name, and then, yeah. But anyway, you know, like, there's weird edge cases, so it's not perfect, but I am glad that they're doing something about it.
Yeah, Riley has a bird that uses slurs.
We don't. I want to clarify. I just thought of that because we do have birds.
Yeah, I said, like, that
just
was
having to
specific.
Clarify that as well. It's great.
Yeah, great that was job, Ollie's team. Speci- great that was Ollie's job. Specific rating.
Well,
see,
I think it's because I can.
Michael.
You might not hear them right now. I hope you can't, but I can hear them screaming in the background. I think that's why I thought of it.
But what y'all want to move on to the next story?
Yeah.
Yes. I forget we're doing things.
Let's go ahead and talk about some Modern Warfare 2. We talked about some toxicity. Let's talk about some more toxicity. And that that's the Modern Warfare 2 beta is now over. Despite the beta pulling in impressive numbers, it was a bit of a divisive experience for many players. Infinity Ward recently put out a blog post thanking anyone who played the beta and outlined what they plan to address ahead of the game's October 28th release date. Here's what Infinity Ward had to say, ripped straight from the aforementioned blog post. Quote, "While sentiment around footstep audio was more positive in Beta Weekend 2, we have your continued feedback on the volume of footsteps and will continue to balance enemy/friendly footstep audio ahead of launch. Enemy visibility is something that came up throughout both weekends of our beta. While many of you remarked that the improvement on Weekend 2, we'll look to tweak any increased enemy visibility to allow for better visual tracking of opponents that is not solely the traditional nameplate. Disbanding lobbies are another topic we addressed during the beta. We feel this is an important feature and are actively looking for potential solutions for launch. In terms of weapons, we are very happy with the results of the weapon tuning changes we made for Weekend 2 for the beta. We have made more changes to come given weapon performance in the beta, and we're very excited for everyone to get their hands on with all of the weapons in Modern Warfare 2. We are excited to see so much interest in our third-person playlist. We have heard feedback on the camera shoulder swapping, and will continue to make refinements to this mode come launch. Ground War and Invasion also got some love from players in the beta. Thanks to our diligent fans, good God, I can't speak today, we have many bugs to work through in both of our battle map modes. We also have some improvements coming for AI and navigation for Invasion," end quote. Michael, we shared our first initial impressions of the MW2 beta last week. Now that we had a chance to fully dive into it, what are your thoughts on it? What would you like to see changed? And what should Infinity Ward not change?
Don't change that third-person mode. That mode is fantastic. I absolutely love that one. I saw no changes need to be done with that. Even when you're spectating and they got that third-person mode to where you're looking over a person's shoulder like a paintball video or whatever, it looked really cool. I actually really like that. I never played Ground War, so I didn't play that one, so I can't talk about that. But honestly, I can see what people are talking about with the footsteps. I didn't really notice it at first, but there is noise everywhere in the game, so I can see why some people get confused on what's friendly and what footsteps are enemies, because everybody sounds the exact same. Like everybody's at the same volume. It's not like friendly footsteps are quieter. So you're always checking corners, but I always thought that was intentional because with everybody running around like chickens with their heads cut off, you know, all you would hear are footsteps. So that keeps you on your toes and it keeps you diligent. I really like the beta. I didn't play it all weekend because I unfortunately had other things to do. But like we talked about last time, I really liked the progression of the game. I liked the weapons. They felt really good. I played on the PS5. So I got the adaptive trigger feel, and it felt great. The UI could use some work. I was okay with it, but I do think there are too many menus to get to where you want to go. I would like to be able to get to the gunsmith menu a lot faster, because I think that's where I'm going to spend a lot of time with my within the menu. So I don't know. I don't really think there's a whole lot that they should change or that they would even have to change. The game felt like it was good to go from what I played. I know everybody has different experiences. I really like what they're doing with the multiplayer Modern Warfare 2. I like where they're headed with the look of the game, the feel of the game, the sound of the game. The sound is amazing. And it really shows that they're stepping up. Like, whatever this new engine that they're improving on is, I hope they keep refining it, because man, at this point, Modern Warfare 3 reboot is going to probably be the best Modern Warfare, because this alone is just absolutely amazing, and I can't wait to play more of it.
That's kind of cool because, like, I mean, I can't speak too much about the beta, but I did hear just like a little bit of stuff from people that I work with that they weren't really super into it. So I was kind of expecting your take to be a little more negative, but yeah, it's good that
Michael's take not being super positive. What?
Am I just a negative Nancy in this group?
No. No, you just have strong opinions.
Well, actually, I guess it'd be...
That's the nicest negative way to Ned. Say yes, I mean, basically.
Would it be negative Ned? Am I the negative Ned of the group?
Yeah. No.
Who's to say?
Who's to say you guys? That's who.
We don't like to pick sides. That's for audiences. So.
Are you sure? Because Clash of the Stash seems to be different.
Well, Clash of the Stash is its own collaboration series where we do have a judge who is swearing to be impartial. So, you know, it's its own thing.
But yeah, I mean, I like the beta. I mean, I can see like it changes a lot from regular Call of Duty. So everybody can't say it's the same Call of Duty as 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Modern Warfare came out. Like, no, they actually made some pretty...
There is a lot of Modern Warfare 2019 and Modern Warfare 2.
I mean, and I love it.
So, I really like the beta. Don't get me wrong. I was talking it up in last week's episode. I don't think it's perfect. I do have some things that I would like to bring up. One of those things being the footsteps. The footsteps were still pretty bad. I do love how it seems that they took the feedback from Ground War and what was it, the third person mode. Those two modes were awesome. I don't like Ground War. They made these, I don't know what it is, because Ground War in Modern Warfare 2019 was a mode I loved when it first launched, and then I just grew to hate it, just absolutely despise it.
You know, it's strange. I never cared for Ground War. Like, as I said earlier, I didn't even play Ground War in the beta because even with the first one, I don't know, I couldn't get into it. Like, it felt like Battlefield Lite, and I was just like, I just want to play Battlefield.
But now, see, that, though, I think with Modern Warfare 2 from the beta, it's the small changes I think they made to it that has really helped. Even something as small as the ability to mark enemies and locations to go to is a huge improvement for me. So Ground War, I loved. I didn't like Invasion. I played a few games of that. I was still just like, what are we doing here? Third person mode, loved third person mode, loved a lot of the quick play modes. I don't know if you use the BR rifles. Dude, those things are laser beams.
Halo battle rifle.
They cut through enemies like wet toilet paper. They were that good. So it was a lot of fun playing with that. I actually enjoyed a lot of the maps, which is a huge contrast to Modern Warfare 2019, which I would say that's its biggest fault, is the maps were bad.
The maps.
Which is, hilariously enough, what Michael loved about the game.
Yeah, but, I don't know what it is about everybody, but I really liked the maps in 2019. I thought they were well done.
So I really like the beta. There's a lot of things that I do think they can improve on. You did say one thing, and this is my biggest complaint about the entire beta. The UI is awful. I did say something last week that not everything everybody says that needs to be changed should be changed. I do think we take a little bit too much into our own feedback to a game, and we don't think about, oh, well, this person is also buying the game. They have just as much of a right to say what was good and bad as I do. So as much as we bitch and complain about campers, those campers are still buying the game. So it's a catch-22, really. You're damned if you do change it, you're damned if you don't. But when it comes to the UI, that is an everybody problem, I think. Because, man, those menus are clunky as fuck. I cannot get... It's so hard to get to the gunsmith. It's so hard to change your weapons in-game.
Exactly.
And the perk packages as well. It fit, like, as much as we were kind of talking about the perk package thing last week, And, oh, it was cool to see them try to change it. Just the intention is appreciated. I don't think it's executed very well, just because I don't know what the purpose is of it, you know? And I don't think you can, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you could change the perks while in-game. So I was stuck with whatever perk packages I had ready available at the time, which was very unfortunate when I'm trying to set up a ground war class, not knowing I'm playing ground war until my friend launches the game mode, and I'm having to put on EOD, but wait, I can't put on EOD anymore because I don't have that perk equipped. So I'm having to put on smoke grenades and all these other things, and I can't actually fully set my class in game now. So the UI, I think, definitely needs changed above almost anything else.
Yeah, I would like. I would just like to get to a gunsmith a lot quicker.
Yeah, the gunsmith.
Yeah, because that thing is amazing. I love the gunsmith.
Yeah, footstep audio you can improve, and everything else. I think it's a case by case basis. There's a lot of talk around what Infinity Ward, I think, a little bit hilariously, calls sentinels, which are sentinels or campers. I find it funny how they came up with a name for campers. They're like, we're gonna call them sentinels, rushers versus sentinels, and people saying the game's too sentinel focused. And I think it's a case by case basis. I don't really know where to go on that. I think by putting more checks and balances into the game would really help. Whether that be the putting the red dots back on the minimap and stuff like that, we'll just have to see what Infinity Ward decides to end up doing and what players continue to give their feedback on. But those are my main things here. Love the beta, but the UI, man, that was by far. I spent a lot of time just battling the UI more than enemies on the battlefield there. So
yeah, see, for me, I wouldn't mind if they actually changed up the UI, because I would like to get to Gunsmith a lot sooner. And also, do not put message of the day as the biggest thing and the first thing you see and hide everything at the bottom.
What's the message of the day, Michael?
Leave that somewhere else. I don't care about the message of the day. I want to play the game mode that I want to play. That's my message to you. That's my message of the day, Infinity Ward. Get me to my game mode now.
But it seems like both of us were pretty hyped from the beta. Riley, you said you didn't play it, but you did hear about it. Anything else you want to say real quick before we move on?
No, I don't think so.
So let's move on to our last story before we get to our main topic. And that is Ubisoft announcing that Skull and Bones has been delayed to March 2023, marking the fifth time the pirate-themed game has faced a delay. Here's an official announcement from the dev team. Quote, "Today we'd like to give an update regarding our release date. Although Skull and Bones' development is finished at this stage, the invaluable feedback received during our various technical tests and insider program convinced us we could use a bit of extra time to polish and balance the experience even further and ensure you all get the best experience we can offer. We have therefore decided to push our initial launch date to March 9th, 2023. We will be organizing more insider program sessions to continue gathering feedback, and in case you haven't had the chance to participate yet, you can also look forward to our open beta in the near future. Thank you for your support and stay tuned for more information, courtesy of the Skull and Bones development team." Riley, what are your thoughts on this delay?
My singular thought with this delay is, man, somebody at Ubisoft really, really, really cares about this game. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a game that refused to die like this. It's like, it just keeps coming back for more. And there's something a little bit admirable about that.
Yeah, it's like Rocky without the charm to me.
I was actually interested in the game when they did the hour-long kind of, like, showing it off in the summer. I thought it was pretty okay. Like, it's not... I think maybe people have to tune their expectations to what this thing is going to be, which is kind of, I mean, admittedly hard to do because Ubisoft has been talking about this game for almost 10 years, so of course you know, some of the expectations are going to get a little bit, they're going to inflate a little bit, but, you know, I think for a ship combat game, like, it, to me, it doesn't look too bad. But I am very, very surprised that Ubisoft is, like, just letting this go, and they're pouring more and more money into it. Usually, like, a publisher, developer would just, like, you know, put it out or cancel it. And I'm very surprised that they're not being forced to put this game out in the state it is currently in. And I'm also a little bit surprised that it's just not going to get quietly canceled. So somebody over there really cares about it. And, you know, I have to admire that a little bit. A lot, actually.
So, Riley, I can actually think of two games that has met the same amount of, I guess, love, like Skull and Bones. One, oddly enough, from Ubisoft, and one from Sony. Beyond Good and Evil has been developed for so long, it's not even the same game that was teased 10 years ago.
Sure.
So there's still Skull and Bones. I mean, it's the Skull and Bones.
Skull, not Skull and Bones. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is, like, have either of you seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
A little bit.
I've seen bits and pieces.
Have you guys seen that Nutriboom episode with the cult?
I don't think I have.
So the point of that story in that episode was, like, it's basically making fun of cults and being like, oh, the founder's wife is missing, but yet they're saying publicly she's alive and well. And that's what it kind of feels like for Beyond Good and Evil 2. Is Ubisoft Jeez. Keeps telling us, oh, this game's alive and well, but I keep going, is it though?
Are you sure?
Have you not seen the alpha gameplay we put out? Come on, man. It's okay. Look at that.
By the way, video. Mild spoilers for the end of that episode. The wife ends up being the villain, so I don't know what this analogy means for Beyond Good and Evil 2. But besides the point...
That it's still alive, but it's not what we thought it was.
But at least Beyond Good and Evil has some sort of, like, cachet with gaming audiences. Skull and Bones is, like, a brand new property, and they just won't... They're not going to let it die, which is very interesting. It's, like, a very interesting, like...
It is a little endearing, thing. I gotta admit. It is a little endearing that this game... And by the way, they did say, for all of us kind of making fun of it right now, the team did say that the game is in a finished state, they're just going to be polishing it. But it's very important to point out this is the game's fifth delay.
Yeah.
So... I think us kind of poking fun at it is a little bit of tongue-in-cheek being like, this game just won't die. It just keeps coming back for more. It does have a little bit of that Rocky quality. It's just, I wish I liked the game more.
Wasn't it sort of canceled for a few years? Not, like, actually canceled, but...
It was rumored to, because Ubisoft hadn't said anything about it, and it wasn't on their fiscal records.
Exactly.
So everybody's like, oh, the game is dead. Like, oh yeah, that thing.
And the thing that I think hurts for me with the game more is not only that I think it didn't look very good, but also it's a $70 game. It's Ubisoft's first $70 game they're going to be putting out. And I don't see the... If you're going to, and Michael's had a big issue with this, I'm not trying to get him into another rant about $70 games, but for me, just my personal taste, if you're going to go into this, oh, next-gen games are $70, you gotta come in and show something that's at least worth that amount to me. You know, you can't just be going, oh, it's just because everybody else is doing it, that's why we're doing it, and that's what it feels like Skull and Bones is doing. So, while I'm with Riley, I understand they just won't die, and I do admire them for that, and I do appreciate them, whatever it is, them going, hey, this game needs another delay. We need to bite the bullet, take the jokes from idiots like us, and we just need to delay it and make sure it's polished. I appreciate that. That said, I hope whenever this game launches, it's worth that price tag, because I just don't see it yet.
Well, it won't be. Also, going back, that second game I was talking about is The Last Guardian, Sony's Guardian from Team Ico. That one took forever to come out. There, but I thought it was vaporware for a while. But hey, that finally came out, so that's the thing. Yeah, Taylor, like you, I am not excited for this game. It just looks kind of meh. It doesn't look like it's worth $70. It honestly doesn't look like it's worth $60. Don't forget, this was originally a spinoff of Black Flag.
Yeah, AC4.
Yeah, and that came out a long time ago. And that spinoff ended up becoming its own thing. And the reason so many people had excitement for Skull and Bones is because we thought it was going to be like Black Flag, where you do have a ship and you can build up. You can get off the ship and take over castles and raid stuff. And yeah, sure, you can grift players. But, you know, you also have like PvE style things where you can just go on land and pillage. Yeah. You know, that was the fun stuff that you did in Black Flag. You know, you could just sail around, get out, do your thing, do your assassin's thing, and get back on your ship and have fun.
I have a contrarian opinion here. Okay, and I'm going to tell you, Riley. I'm going to tell you a little story. So when I was a kid playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, I always wished I always wished, man, I wish I could get off the skateboard and walk around. Now, they recently put out the remake of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on PlayStation Plus, and I played it, and I was thinking, oh, why the fuck would I ever want to get off the skateboard when this is the best part of the game?
So I can add on to Riley here. So I recently played and submitted the review for NBA 2K23 on Next Gen for thenerdstash.com. Michael knows a little bit about this. Our audience doesn't, because I bitched to Michael about it before the show last week. So on Next Gen of NBA 2K... kind of to put a little bit of a story on this, like Riley did, I've always, with this my career for 2K, I really wanted them to dive into it. Stuff you can do, be the player you want to be, and let it be all optional. And when they announced the city, and the city you can skateboard around and do quests, and it's like a whole different experience for NBA 2K22 and 2K21, pretty cool. NBA 2K23. None of those quests really feel optional, and a lot of them are mandatory. So most of the time when I'm going around in this basketball game, I feel like I'm skating around and doing quests like getting a Gatorade from a local shop owner, helping a local vegan hot dog vendor out, and just doing a whole lot of not playing basketball in a basketball game. So be careful what you wish for, I think, is what Riley was trying to say, and what I think I'm trying to say too. So I don't think that's the case with Skull and Bones, but it's a fair point regardless. Be careful what you wish for sometimes with video games.
Okay, yeah. But granted, Tony Hawk Underground proved that you can do the whole get off the skateboard deal if it's done right.
Sure. I think for me, like, I think the reason I'm so excited for Skull and Bones was playing, because like Assassin's Creed 4, like Black Flag, is one of my favorite Assassin's Creed games. It might be my favorite Assassin's Creed game, and I have a lot of fond memories of, like, my favorite parts of the game were sailing around in the ship and, you know, attacking forts and things like that. I didn't really care that much about, like, getting off on, like, these tiny islands and, you know, just like searching for treasure. I mean, like, I kind of put those two parts of the game in separate, like, boxes. So, like, I don't really mind that Skull and Bones is just going to be, you know, ship combat. I think the one thing that does kind of suck a little bit is that you can't, like, jump from ship to ship when you're fighting it. So, you know, that's the one part that gives me pause. But I don't know. I'm still excited for the game, I think.
We'll have to wait and see, though, because the game originally was supposed to come out in November, and now we're going to have to wait all the way till March to see what everybody thinks about Skull and Bones. But let's go ahead and get into our main topic here, guys. I'm excited for this one. So moving on to our main story this week, we're injecting a little bit of Nerds Talk Movies into our show today. That's because we're going to be talking about our thoughts on that trailer for HBO's The Last of Us series, starring Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. And our discussion will include spoilers for both The Last of Us Part 1 and The Last of Us Part 2. So if you haven't played one or both of these games yet and plan to before the series drops, this is pretty much it for us today at Power Up and Game. We greatly appreciate you for joining us. Check out the links in the description for ways to find us. And we'll be back next week for another episode. But if you have played both games, or if you just don't care, stick around. Take your shoes off. Stay a while. We're about to dive into this trailer. So I'm going to give people about 5 seconds of dead silence if they haven't played those games and want to go ahead and click off this episode. Again, we appreciate you. Alright, so fans of the original game probably spotted a lot of familiar locations and characters throughout the trailer. Before I get into the video game questions I have, what are your thoughts on the teaser?
I watched the teaser today for the first time. I think it dropped yesterday as of recording, and I watched it today. I really liked the teaser. I mean, without going too far into it, I was convinced that this was just like a dumb idea, like a dumb, stupid idea to have The Last of Us as a TV show. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, holy shit, this actually looks pretty good. Also, if there's any Game of Thrones fans out there, both Joel and Ellie are played by ex-Game of Thrones actors.
So. It's, the Viper and Bella Mormont, I believe.
Yeah, one of the Starks who like kind of takes over for a little bit. This has certainly raised my excitement for the show, the trailer.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Michael, you want to go ahead or you want me to go?
Yeah, because you're most excited about this than I am. Okay. So I want you to take up most of the time this time. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still excited for this because, oh crap, they're actually like, they're paying attention to the story. They got, drunk man ball, you know, Pedro is a great actor. I'm always excited to see him into anything, really. Especially when I found out like he was gonna be in Mandalorian. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Yeah, but for this, I think it was a good teaser. It didn't really show you like a whole lot. It was just a bunch of like fan servicey kind of shots. And it kept it mysterious. Like it didn't really play up the whole this is a pandemic kind of thing, and the whole, it's the end of the world, I can't trust anybody. It really was just...
If you hadn't played the games, you probably are intrigued by this trailer, but exactly, I feel like people who played or know about the games got so much more out of it.
Yeah, it's a weird 100%. Feeling.
What I mean by fans... Oh, I'm sorry. That's what I mean by fan service. Like it played up for the people who played the game and they wanted to see some locations. They didn't really have to hammer it in of what this story is about, because it really does feel like it was focusing on people who played the game already. And for those who haven't played the game, it's going to pique their interest, because I don't know what's going on, but everything looks really cool. I like the music. I like the way it looks. Pedro Pascal looks great. And all the players are like, ooh, I know this one. Ooh, I've seen this. Ooh, I remember this scene, especially at the very end, where you get that one quick look at how good the clickers look.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm in. I'm actually kind of excited for this.
Yeah, we actually got a lot of stuff from the game, the first game in the trailer. We got...
There's a lot of shots of the pre-post-apocalyptic setting, to where, you know, at the beginning of the first game where Joel is trying to get out of there with his daughter.
Yeah,
there's a lot of shots there that I feel like whenever audiences who hadn't played the game watch whatever HBO, Neil Druckmann, Craig Mazin, by the way, I believe he was involved with Chernobyl, which I haven't seen Chernobyl, but everybody says that's one of the best limited time shows of all time. So he is definitely somebody you want at the head of this thing. So whatever they ended up coming up with, I feel like audiences who hadn't played the game are going to be shocked by that opening.
Yeah, I'm actually interested to see if they open the series with that, or if they save that kind of gut punch moment for like later in the series, because they could totally do a thing where they don't show that at the beginning and people that played the games knows what's going on with Joel, like why he's so fucked up, for lack of a better term. But the people who haven't played the game and are watching the show might not, like, they won't know until the end, like, what actually happened. I hope they don't save that for the end for the people that don't know what's going on, because it is such a special moment at the beginning of that game.
Yeah. I'm not getting my hopes up for that, for, like, getting what I want to happen, and if it doesn't happen on screen, I'm going to be disappointed. But it is one of those things that I think if they do show that at the beginning of the show, it just sets a stage.
Yeah.
And for a different reason, obviously, but the beginning of Watchmen, the TV series, if you've seen it, it sets the stage for what we're going to see. And it's in a completely different context, of course, but that's what I kind of want to make an analogy to, that Last of Us could really just set that tone with that intro. Don't know, not going to be upset if they don't end up doing it, but that's just me thinking after seeing the teaser and everything in there.
The other thing that I was thinking about as I was watching the trailer in reference to that beginning scene at the beginning of the game, I mean, this is full of spoilers, right? Where,
yeah, we gave everybody ample time.
Where, you know, Sarah dies and all that in Joel's arms. I was kind of thinking, like, man, what a special opportunity to kind of take this. I don't know how long it is in the game. It feels very short. It feels like 15 minutes. I'm sure that whole sequence is probably closer to like 30 to 45 minutes from, you know, beginning to end, that beginning sequence. But, it would be interesting if they kind of took that and expanded that whole thing into one episode. You know what I mean? And kind of show different perspectives of, like, how the world is kind of beginning to fall apart around, you know, Joel and his daughter. And there's actually a scene in that trailer where all you see is two hands holding each other. And there's two thoughts. I mean, the thing that I immediately thought of when I saw that was, are they going to show Sarah's mom and, like, Joel's relationship to her? Because we don't get that in the game, and that would be an interesting way to kind of expand the lore and the story. Some people think that it's Bill, who's played by Nick Offerman. Some people think it might be his partner in that scene, so I don't know. I also got to say, Nick Offerman as Bill is a perfect casting choice, 100%. Yeah, I don't know. And
yeah, Nick Offerman is just awesome.
Yeah. I the other thing about the trailer that interested me is, like, it was kind of weirdly nostalgic to see these things on the screen. Like, the thing that got me first was those two buildings. One where the one's kind of, like, knocked on the side of the other one. Like, I distinctly, very clearly remember that from the game. The other one is where they're hiding out in the drain pipe. Distinctly, very clearly remember that as well. Of course, the end where, or the ending of the trailer, which is the beginning of the game. When I saw that, I was like, holy shit, this is gonna be cool. Like, I don't know, I think I'm also interested potentially to share this story with my husband, since, you know, he's never played the game and probably never will. So I'm excited to go to him and be like, hey, do you want to watch this TV show? I promise you it'll be really good. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think this is going to be one hell of a series. I was kind of excited for this because I'm a huge fan of Pedro Pascal. At this point, I think he's one of those actors that's just, he's always a win. He can't miss when it comes to performances. So I think he's just going to nail it here. Bella Ramsey, I thought she was fantastic in Game of Thrones. And she, I don't know if she was everybody's first pick for Ellie, but I think she's going to nail it too. So I think these two casting choices that weren't everybody's fan castings are just going to crush it. When it comes to just the trailer itself, we were kind of talking about earlier, like people who hadn't played the games, I think they're going to be intrigued by it. As somebody who played through part one, who knows everything about part two, I think this is one of the best teaser trailers I've seen in quite some time. It didn't show too much. It had one. It had an awesome song accompanying it, and it fit the tone of the. I want to say the game, but it fit the tone of the series very well. It showed just like all these video game Easter eggs from the first game. I didn't even spot Nick Offerman at first. Like I was just scrolling through comments and saying, "Oh my God, Nick Offerman's in this!" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I forgot he's in this. Wait, he's in the trailer?" I had to go back and find it. So yeah, this is one hell of a trailer. I cannot wait to see more. Anything else before we get into some things we would want to see from the series?
The one thing I just want to say, the one thing that I hope they don't downplay, and actually in the trailer it's kind of seems like they're not downplaying it, is Ellie's like queerness is such an essential part of her character. And in the trailer, at least, they showed Riley, who is Ellie's...
The DLC from...
Yeah.
That was the... What is it called? The entire Left Behind. DLC from... Yeah, Left Behind.
Yeah.
Which is a really... It's a really fucking sad story.
Yeah.
Because it's explained in part one, and you get the context of what happened at the mall in part in the DLC. Seems like we're getting that, too.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm interested in that. I just hope that it doesn't kind of get lost in the mix, because I don't know, for some reason, well, not for some reason, I mean, it's pretty obvious why, but I feel very connected to Ellie's character because of, and I think a lot of people who play the game probably feel the same way because of her queerness. So, you know, I hope that doesn't get kind of lost, and I don't think it will. I mean, that's just a potential concern, I guess.
Yeah. Getting into our second part of this here, it's no secret that The Last of Us Part 2 is much more divisive than Part 1, mostly due to some narrative decisions Naughty Dog made in Part 2. Do you think this series is a second chance for The Last of Us to retcon some of the things from the video games? Or do you think they should stick with the story Naughty Dog originally told? And also, what should they take from the games and what should they stay away from? I'm going to go ahead and go first and let you guys go ahead and discuss from there. I do think they should diverge, mainly because my big problem with Part 2's narrative, and this is getting to spoiler territory one last time, because every time I try to bring up the spoiler, I try to catch myself. But I don't have a problem with Joel dying. I don't have a problem with him getting killed. I have a problem in The Last of Us 2 when the part one, the whole story, the whole narrative, it feels, I don't want to say fresh, but it feels so cohesively different than anything we've really seen in the past with video games. And part two, it kind of felt to me that we went from this awesome story with two awesome characters that everybody loves to, oh, all of a sudden now it's just a revenge story to which Ellie kills all these people to get to her revenge. And then at the end, she doesn't take her revenge when it's like meant to be a form of redemption, but she's already crossed that line so far that it feels kind of not earned. So that's why I feel like they should kind of retcon that in part two, and at least don't go in that revenge focused storyline there, because I just don't think it worked for the story. And also the time skip too, I don't think helped either. But so that's what I would hope they avoid, is that. I don't have a problem with Joel dying. He can die, but this is seasons down the line. I would imagine this show wants to go on for 5-6 seasons with Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey. But what do you guys think?
I certainly don't think they're going to touch on part two for this first season, or maybe first two seasons. I do.
Yeah, I don't think they won't even get close to part two until like season three or something like that.
I do think if they do go with part two, I actually like the story of part two, and I understand what you're saying about it doesn't feel earned for Ellie to not take her revenge. However, I kind of look at it a different way in the sense of, to me, when I got to that point in the game, I took it more as it's not that Ellie has learned something or, you know, is suddenly a moral character. It's more like the path of revenge has exhausted her and estranged her so much from, like, Dina and, like, other loved ones that she gets to a point where she's like, you know what, I'm so exhausted and this isn't gonna bring me any sort of peace, you know, so this has all kind of been for nothing, which I thought was very powerful. I mean, it's also highlighted in the things that Ellie loses. She loses several fingers. I think at the end of the game, I can't remember exactly at the end of part two, but I don't even think she's with Dina anymore. Like, Dina went off and, you know, like, went away. She took the baby. Yeah. So, like, you know, that's kind of how I read the story arc of part two. I will say, I think there's more people that didn't play the games are gonna accept Joel's death simply because of the fact that it's not a video game and they're not gonna be the ones killing him. Because, like, in part two, didn't you control Abby and you, like, actually killed Joel? I can't remember if they put you in control of that or if that was just a cutscene, but I feel like, from memory, I'm going back, like, 2 years now, so, they made you do it. I mean, I'm wrong about that.
I kind of have a question. I don't want to say really a question, but I guess just a rebuttal to, like, her art being earned. I think it's also, and maybe this will be done better in a TV series, but it's also because we're playing as Ellie in part two, and you're in that game, you're killing so many people in the name of revenge. So it's one of those things to me to where the gameplay and the narrative clash with each other in the worst way. So it doesn't work out. Again, when it comes to the revenge story with Abby and Joel, completely fine. And even though people hate it, from her point of view, it makes a lot of fucking sense. And I can't really fault it. And I don't fault Joel for the things that end part one. It's one of those situations that I think that would be far more interesting of a game if you just focused on those two. But whenever you had Ellie into the mix and she's killing all these people, and then by the time it's like, I'm choosing not to do it. And as you said it's not necessarily that she's a better person. It's just that she kind of gives up. It's unsatisfying, you know? I would say, to me at least.
I kind of get that. I think also, to switch gears a little bit, I'm interested to see if they weave any of part two into, like, the first season of the show. And what I mainly mean by that is, like, are they going to show Abby, like, at all during the first season? Even if it's just, like, a small, quick, like, 5-minute thing, like, this is, for the people that know, you know, like, this is Abby, especially, like, when they get to the hospital. That's the other thing that I'm interested to see, people that haven't played the game, how they're going to handle that whole thing at the end of the first game and how they're going to, like, handle that in the show, because it really works in the video game, I think, because as gamers, we're used to doing this thing, right? We're used to, like, going and saving the person, but what we're not used to is, like, you going and saving that person, like, actually was, like, a really horrible thing to do. because they didn't want to be saved, and you just killed, like, you basically just fucked all of humanity, and you killed, like, all the people that
you
were
saved
trying to,
one,
like,
person and screwed over humanity as a result.
Which she didn't even want.
Yeah. Which also a lot of, like, the thing is a lot of people do emphasize with Joel who are, like, fathers and stuff, and that's one of the things that I think also kind of hurt there. But you're also right at the same time. That's where I think that ending of part one is so perfect. And while I started laughing earlier, it's because while you were talking, I came to the realization, I was like, oh my god, this first season or first two seasons of this show are going to be, it's not going to be easy. But in comparison, like, they're going to be smooth sailing in terms of source material and just probably loving it. And then once they get to the end of part once they get to the end of part one and into part two, oh, it's going to be interesting to see where they go, because you're going to either somehow pull it off and everybody loves it, or you're going to make fans of part two very happy and piss everybody off again, or you're going to make everybody who loved Joel and didn't want all those things to happen there very happy and piss off fans of part two. So you know what I mean? Like, it's gonna be very interesting once we get to that point. Hopefully we get to that point and the show's that good. But I do think it's just funny how, like, the source material is just gonna be so easy to follow, hopefully, up until the end of season or the end of part one.
Yeah, I think they have to do what the end of the first game did, right? That's like the whole, that's the whole deal, right? Yeah.
It's like, that's this part of the reason it's so remembered too, is because of that ending is so shocking. And Michael, I know you haven't talked a lot here. I feel like you're gearing up for another.
No, I'm not. I'll actually listen to you guys, because I didn't play part two for a certain reason. So yeah, I want you guys to go ahead and get your ideas out.
Well, I mean, I think that's basically it. I mean, yeah, the first game is, like you said, Taylor, like, it's bookended at the beginning and the ending with these two, like, kind of jaw-dropping, shocking moments. And I don't know, I hope that they work for the audience that doesn't know what's gonna happen. You know, I'm very interested, because I won't say heavily imply that heavily suggest to my husband that we watch this show when it comes out. So yeah, I don't know. I'm just, like, talking about it gets me more and more excited, because there's so many places that they can go with the first season. I mean, generally it's going to follow the first game, I think, but, you know, how much of it are they going to expand? How much of it are they going to change slightly? You know, the other thing that they could really do is expand the kind of lore of the Fireflies. They could show a lot more about that whole organization, because I feel like the first game is very heavily focused just solely on, like, Joel and Ellie's perspective. But I would be interested to see in the show them kind of intersperse some, you know, other, like, they have to set up a few characters that are gonna be at the hospital that are gonna die, right? Like characters that weren't in the game that we're gonna come to love, and people that played the first game are gonna be like, fuck, I love this character and I know what's gonna happen to them at the end.
You need to still capture the confliction that you have at the end of the first game, where you love Joel, but you're also like, wow, I'm not sure I should be doing this. I understand wanting to save it. That's what I think people love so much about the ending as well. And depending on the perspective, by the end of the first game, Joel is either still the anti-hero to you, or he kind of becomes the villain. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can pull that off in TV show form. And by the way, in terms of talent to pull that off, Pedro Pascal.
He's got range, man.
Oh, he's going to be able to nail that.
Yeah.
If that's the direction they go, he's going to be able to nail it. So, Michael, I want to hear your thoughts, man. You've been very quiet here.
Oh, yeah, because my thoughts aren't as extensive as yours and Riley. Because, again, I didn't play part two mostly because of the way they handled the story. Like, I thought Abby was kind of cool. Like, but my thing is, the way they botched the story between Ellie and Joel, like, that's what drew me into Last of Us Part One, the first Last of Us. For anybody who, I'm pretty sure I talked about on this show before, I didn't really care for the gameplay in Last of Us 1, but I loved the story between Joel and Ellie. The connection those two had was absolutely amazing. It kept me playing because I wanted to see more of their story, especially when it came to the realistic giraffe. That shit was awesome. So I was like, I want more of this. I want more of these characters, like, getting to know each other and seeing different parts of this destroyed world. But unfortunately, I was one of those people who took a look into the leaks of part two because of some of the things I've heard. And when I found out how they handled Joel's death, I don't mind main characters dying. I actually, when I did some writing, I'm actually okay with my characters dying. That's one of the cool things about Game of Thrones. Characters die. Like, there's actual repercussions. And in an apocalyptic world, people are going to die. So when it comes like, oh, Joel's going to die, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You can play this up. You can play Joel's death up for Ellie because they got this connection now. That's cool. That's a natural way to move things forward because if it's going to focus on Ellie, I'm okay with them killing off Joel. The way they did it, I felt was so underwhelming and empty because I wanted to, because anybody who's played the first one, that cliffhanger of an ending was so good that you felt like they were going somewhere with Joel and Ellie. As Ellie started growing up, the more that she learned about her, the world around her, and these clickers, and what Joel actually did, I was looking forward to that. I was looking forward to Ellie confronting Joel about what happened. But it never came to light. Like, it was just like, all right, we're going to do this time skip. Does Ellie know about what Joel did? Who knows? Did Joel get away with lying? Probably. And that's what killed Last of Us Part 2 for me. The one storyline I wanted to continue, even if it was just for a couple of levels, where Ellie confronted Joel, I wanted that. I wanted to play as Ellie because I loved the Left Behind. I love that DLC. It was great. I didn't mind playing as Abby. You know, I was okay with that. Like, okay, cool. We're killing off Joel. Just make it to where I feel something. That's what the game is good at. It's good at making you feel for these characters. And for them to drop the ball that hard on Joel, I kind of felt like that's going to be the rest of the story. And I'm like, okay, if you couldn't even get one of your main characters' deaths right, I'm kind of iffy on the rest of the game. And from what I've heard about the game, about how they treated Ellie, how they made her kind of evil, I get revenge. I get that. But the way that they tried to just like really force Ellie into that thing while making Abby kind of like the good guy, it just felt weird to me. I don't know. It's like it's as if Druckmann and I forgot who else he had help him write the sequel. Holly, I believe was her name. I believe it was a lady named Holly. Hold on, let me get this right first. Yeah, I'm sorry, Haley. Haley Gross. She helped write the sequel. And it felt like they didn't care about what happened in Last of Us 1. Like, they're just like, all right, yeah, we're getting rid of Joel. We're getting rid of everything that you cared about the first one. And we're just going to go super grim dark. This is our edgelord phase. It's just like, oh, God, we're doing this. Okay, cool. So knowing that Ellie was going on this revenge, her revenge path would have made way more sense to me if she confronted Joel and they got into a fight. Because they always looked after each other. They watched each other's back. And they separate so Ellie can cool off. And then Joel dies. And Ellie blames herself for his death because of her getting mad at him and leaving him behind. And maybe that what sent her on her vengeful path. Yeah, I would like that. I'm like, okay, now Ellie has a reason for this vengeance rather than just random, oh, I'm just going to kill this person. Like, you're killing all these people, including dogs. Well, all these dogs all of a sudden came out of nowhere. There's no dogs in the first one.
And I hated the Abby fucking dogs.
And Abby is the good guy because she plays with doggies while Ellie kills the doggies. It's like, what the fuck? What? This is uneven writing. Like, it felt like Druckmann wrote Abby's side and maybe Haley Gross.
Wait, hang on. I have a slight rebuttal, though. In the second game, they do imply that Ellie has found out what Joel did, and they went through a period of time, which granted, we don't get to see it, but they went through a period of time, it's like heavily implied, where they were not on very good terms. And the whole reason that Ellie goes on her journey for revenge is they had just gotten to the point where they were starting to kind of reconnect, and then he gets killed. He gets fucking murdered. And so that...
Oh, boo! I don't like this... off screen nonsense. Oh, I hate that so much.
I get that, and I hope in the show they actually like show like more of the in between of one and two, and, you know, kind of that fight and, you know, all this stuff that could have gone down in between them. So, yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah.
I think if you, if the, I don't know. I do want to point out, I did mention something earlier about, like, the gameplay clashing with the story. And I was starting to think about it. I was like, well, you know, I do love Uncharted. I think the difference with that, though, is Uncharted never, it never really ponders Nathan Drake at killing all a bunch of people. It's just what the gameplay is, and we have this epic adventure story. And that's what I think the difference is between something like Uncharted and The Last of Us Part 2, to where is its story really clashes with the gameplay itself. And it just...
Well, actually, sorry to interrupt, but actually HBO actually wanted less action and more focus on character drama.
Okay.
I'm fine with that too. So in terms of the show, look, there's a way, I do think this, as much as I don't like it and don't like the direction, I think there is a way you can tell the story they told in two in this series, and it'd be great. I still don't think they should go that route exactly. They should change some things, but...
Oh, yeah, they're definitely going to change a lot of things, especially, like, some of the more action-heavy scenes. I think they're going to, like... they're still going to do them, but I don't think it's going to be, like, like they did with, that zombie show, Walking Dead. I'm kind of afraid, like,
Walking Dead's about to finish up its series, by the way. It's a little sad, to be honest with you.
Is it, though?
How little press it's getting. Well, at one point, it was such a beloved series. I feel like
Yeah, but the problem
it should get a little more love now that it's over, I think. Even though
I mean, it's not going to be over because they still got the spinoff movies.
Well, that's true. So, you know what? You got a good point. I'm going to go ahead and shut up now.
But yeah, actually, I'm pretty much done too. But they got Druckmann back. He's heavily involved, and I'm okay with that because he assisted directed the first one. He directed the second one, and I like that they're bringing him in to help write the show. It's him and Craig. I forget his last name.
Craig Mazin from Chernobyl.
Yes, they're both. You mentioned him earlier. They're both working together to write on the show. So it's still going to feel like The Last of Us. Like, the look is already... I wonder if they're going to have Druckmann actually, like, direct an episode or two. That'd be actually kind of cool.
Would you be upset if they don't have the cannibal from the first game?
To be honest, no.
Who was played
by,
what's his name? The guy who plays Nathan Drake. Can't remember his name right now. But
Nolan North.
Troy Baker.
Yeah. No, not Troy Baker. He plays Joel, the other one.
Nolan North,
yeah. He played, you know, the cannibal.
Oh, was that... See, those two are in everything that it is kind of...
Troy Baker voices Joel and Ashley Johnson voices Ellie.
Yeah.
In the video games.
Well, so. also, here's the other thing. Speaking of Troy Baker, I don't want to drag this on forever.
They're both going to be in the series.
Yeah, he's going to... He has a part in the show.
So does Ashley Johnson, too. They're both going to be in the series.
Probably a cameo, but I'm interested to see how they incorporate them. Maybe they will be the people that are working for the Fireflies that get killed at the end. That would be pretty...
Cool. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. That would make some video game fans be like, shit, they killed... He killed Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson? Troy
Yeah.
What?
This show's got balls, man.
Yeah. So that would be pretty
I agree. I think that would be pretty cool. Regardless, but it's cool that they're also giving both of them some extra respect that I think is very well deserved, because those two, as much as we give the credit for the writing, especially in the first game, to the visuals in both games and just everything about the franchise overall, the performances between Troy Baker and Ashley Johnson should not go unnoticed. They're a big reason why this franchise is so popular too. But I think all in all, for us talking as long as we have about it, we're very hyped about this series. We have a lot of hopes and theories about where we want it to go. But you know what? I gotta admit, after seeing this teaser, and I think both of you agree with me on this, I think we kind of trust HBO to get it right, regardless right now, based on what we saw. So I guess it's one of those things we'll see in 2023. Whenever the show comes out, it's
right
one of my most anticipated show, right as of now.
right along with Skull and Bones. 2023, let's go.
Oh my god.
How dare you? Actually,
all right, so with all that said, Riley, what are you playing?
I gotta be honest, since I went on my little break, I haven't been playing a whole lot. I've kind of been doing a lot of other things other than video games, but I still have played a few things, just not as often as I would previously.
Is it because you're reading books?
Well, you know, reading books and going on hikes and getting into climbing and trying to be
touching grass.
More healthy, mentally and physically. But I'd still play video games. I played a little bit of Live Alive. I think that came out after I went on break. Kind of enjoy that. I don't think I love it as much as a lot of people like loved it, but I did enjoy what I played of that. And then, of course, just playing more Elden Ring. And I've actually been drawn recently to go back and, you know, just like play some more Skyrim, just because, you know, Skyrim. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been playing.
Okay, cool. And what about you, Taylor? What have you been playing?
Haven't been playing all too much this week, other than this weekend playing that Modern Warfare 2 beta, but we already talked about that. So unfortunately I don't have too much to talk about. What have you been playing, Michael?
Me? Well, I have actually been playing Disney's Mirrorverse on my phone. It's actually not that bad. But I've also been playing my most anticipated game, Beacon Pines. That game is absolutely awesome. Everybody, please play it. It's super cute, kind of creepy, and the story is really good. The characters are great. I might actually do like a small talk. Riley, you have Game Pass on PC, right?
I do. I might be getting rid of it soon, but okay, currently I do.
Okay, well, play Beacon Pines before you decide to get rid of it. It is a lovely game. And I don't know, maybe next week or so we'll do a deep dive on it, because I would actually like to see, like to hear your thoughts on it as well. So, you know, we all love a good story and great characters. I think Beacon Pines will be right up all of our alleys, actually. Same goes for you, Taylor. Get the game. Download it. Game Pass. PC and Xbox. Try it out. It is a wonderful game.
Might check it out now. It's on Game Pass.
Yes. It is magnificent. It's my anticipated game of the year. And honestly, it might be my game of the year if it can land the ending. So with that said, Riley, what are you working on and where can we find you?
I'm not working on much of anything other than this podcast. You can't really find me at a lot of places, but you can find me on our Discord. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Find you on a mountaintop somewhere touching grass. Gross.
Actually, that's not far off.
Taylor, what are you working on and where can we find you?
Just working on these podcasts. You can find me in our Discord. The link for that is in the description of this episode.
Awesome. And as for me, I am working on a couple of videos. I've actually done a couple of TikTok stuff. So if you have TikTok, come find me. That's Fox Daddy, as always. You can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. If you find a weirdo on the Fox hoodie, congratulations, you're in the right place. You can also find me on Twitch at Fox Daddy. That's FXDADDY. Although I might move towards YouTube, because that might be the thing after the weird, weird week that was Twitch. Alrighty, and as mentioned by Riley and Taylor, you can find all three of us on our Discord. Go ahead and drop on by and talk to us about Last of Us and what you love and hate about it and what you're most excited about with the show. And even talk to us about Beacon Pines and how it's super cute and cozy and how Riley and Taylor should totally be playing it right now, even though we're recording this podcast. And also, please leave us a rating. It would do us a great favor if you did such a thing, and we would love you forever and ever. And if you want more from the Nerd Stash Network, you may also like our movie and TV podcast called Nerds Talk Movies, which Taylor is a big part of. On that podcast, our crew of experts take on a deeper look at beloved movies and TV shows via retrospective and spoiler talks. So, Taylor, how about you lead us into what's going on over on the other podcast, Nerds Talk Movies?
So, on our upcoming episode of Nerds Talk Movies, we are going to have a retrospective on Annihilation. I want to call it a thriller starring Natalie Portman. And it also has Oscar Isaac, Tessa Thompson, and all sorts of names. It was a really good movie. It had some issues for me, but also it was a lot of fun, and it had one of the most creepy scenes I've ever seen. But this is coming from somebody who doesn't watch horror movies all too much, so take that with a grain of salt. As for the most recent episode of Nerd Stop Movies that's available now, you can check out our retrospective on Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. We wanted a refresher going into Andor, and yeah, it was a lot of fun going back to that galaxy far, far away.
And it's not that far from your TV screen. Look at that. All right, and finally, check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, televisions, and so much more. We also have guides, reviews, opinion pieces, and various other types of content over there as well. Just like Discord, the link to thenerdstash.com is in the description of this very episode, or you can go to the URL and type in thenerdstash.com. So I'd like to give thanks to Riley and Taylor for joining me, and thank all of you for listening in, whether this is your first time or your 600th time. We truly appreciate you taking your time to listen to us ramble on about a whole lot of nothing. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode.